Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, March 2nd, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Zimbabweans expressed mixed views over the launch of the Zimbabwe People's First Party, led by former Vice President Joyce Mujuru.
Dr. Joyce Mujuru still suffers from serious credibility deficit. She was part of the system from 1980 up to 2014 when she was booted out from the party.
Zimbabwe's central bank has assured depositors that the banking sector is not facing a crisis following an announcement by Barclays Private Limited this week that it intends to sell its stake in Barclays Africa Group Limited.
What it means is that when there is that divestment, it means that shareholding has to be taken up by local shareholders. So the new Barclays will actually be a wholly owned local financial institution.
And Zimbabwean parliamentarians pressed the International Monetary Fund to improve relations with Zimbabwe.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
The launch of the Zimbabwe People First Party by former Vice President Joyce Mujuru in Harare on Tuesday has met with mixed reactions. Our correspondent Thomas Chiripasi went into the streets of Harare and filed this report.
Several Harare residents who spoke to Studio 7 said Mrs. Mujuru has to work hard if a new party wants to dislodge ZANU-PF from power in the 2018 national elections. Bevan Chihuri of Mavuku said indications are that Mrs. Mujuru has what it takes to wrestle power from President Robert Mugabe come elections.
She seems to be someone who is prepared to take on the power from the ruling party.
This was echoed by Westgate resident Kudzanai Msena. He said Mrs. Mujuru, who has been in government since independence in 1980, commands the respect of the military that has openly said it would not salute any leader without Liberation War credentials, in apparent reference to former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai leading the main opposition movement for democratic change.
Everywhere in the world, the army supports the government that would be in power at that particular time. So naturally, any new leader who is coming, you just change. Maybe the leadership of the army will be on top.
After launching the Zimbabwe People First Party yesterday, one of Mrs. Mujuru's supporters, Patience Badzima, said the former deputy president is the only person, at least in her view, that can guarantee stability in the country if ZANU-PF was defeated in elections.
I do support the idea as long as it's going to give us peace, and this poverty is too much. People are suffering while people are just fighting. Pamberina Mai Mujuru.
Another Harare resident, Edgar Gweshe, said Mrs. Mujuru has to come out clean over her involvement in government with regards to alleged election rigging and human rights violations if she was to get considerable support from Zimbabweans enough to win against Mr. Mugabe and his party.
I don't think she will be able to make much of an impact, because even if you look at Mujuru herself, she was part of the system that was responsible for the mass murders of innocent Zimbabweans, the system that was responsible for election rigging, and also she's surrounded by the same people who were part of that system.
Political commentator and director of the Coalition Against Corruption, Terry Muchanga, said Mrs. Mujuru missed an opportunity to cleanse herself yesterday when she formally announced the formation of her party, adding that this would be her biggest undoing in the upcoming polls.
Dr. Joyce Mujuru still suffers from serious credibility deficit. She was part of the system from 1980 up to 2014 when she was booted out from the party. So I don't think the people of Zimbabwe could be foolish enough to think that there's something new that she has come up with to bring change in this in Zimbabwe. She still has ZANU-PF DNA tendencies.
ZANU-PF has over the years been linked to serious human rights violations, including atrocities committed by the 5th Brigade in Matabeleland and the Midlands provinces in the 1980s. Some Zimbabweans also believe that the former vice president does not have the power to single-handedly remove Mr. Mugabe from power. Barnabas Tondlana, editor of the Observer newspaper, said Mrs. Mujuru should therefore join forces with Tsvangirai in order to increase the opposition's chances of winning in 2018.
If Mujuru and Morgan Tsvangirai join hands, they have a better chance of removing the president from power. Because what you must look at here is that Mujuru is bringing somebody who can get us into the transition that we are looking for, who is accepted by the military, who is accepted by the generality of the population, and who can have hold a sway with the general populace. But Morgan is the one advantage that he has the numbers. But he does not have any respect from the military.
Some observers say opposition parties should start coalition negotiations in time for the elections in order to prepare the electorate for the polls. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
The Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe has assured depositors that the banking sector is not facing a crisis following an announcement by Barclays PLC this week that it intends to sell its 62.3% stake in Barclays Africa Group Limited, which has operations in 11 African countries, including Zimbabwe. In a statement, Central Bank Chief John Manguja said, at this stage, the Barclays Private Limited company strategy does not impact on the status of Barclays Bank of Zimbabwe Limited on its everyday operations. Barclays Bank of Zimbabwe Managing Director George Gubamatanga told stakeholders Tuesday that even though there was intention to sell, the bank was still part of the PLC family and remained committed to serving its customers. In a related development, some banks are struggling to provide cash and are limiting amounts to individuals and companies, which the central bank blamed on the financial institutions underestimating demand and failing to improve cash distribution to branches. Chief Economist Prosper Chitambara of the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the statement by Manguja is in line with his role.
It's not an unusual step. One of the major roles of the central bank in any country is to ensure that there is financial sector stability. And when a situation arises, like it has arisen in Zimbabwe, where there are negative sentiments concerning one financial institution, which could potentially trigger a bank run on that financial institution that could even poison the whole financial system, I think it becomes incumbent on the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe to kind of settle the nerves of depositors and also settle the nerves of even investors, local or international investors.
Barclays Bank PLC, which owns 68% of Barclays Bank Zimbabwe Limited, announced that it is exiting from Africa as it seeks to focus on the British and American markets. What impact is this likely to have on Zimbabwe?
What it will definitely affect financial sector confidence. Because what it means is that when there is that divestment, it means that shareholding has to be taken up by local shareholders. So the new Barclays will actually be a wholly owned local financial institution. And what we have witnessed over the past few years is that our local financial institutions have been affected by cases of poor corporate governance, cases of lax internal controls. That's why most of the banks that have collapsed over the past few years were locally owned financial institutions. So a number of depositors may not be comfortable with depositing or doing business with a locally owned Barclays bank because of the challenges that we have witnessed in the locally owned financial institutions.
We understand that some people are experiencing cash shortages, and the central bank is saying it is not a problem of the availability of cash, but it's more about distribution. Do you buy this explanation from the central bank?
It's difficult to really know the actual position. It could be a function of both. It could be a function, number one, of distribution, as the central bank is saying, but it could also be the fact that depositors are not confident about the financial system in Zimbabwe.
That was Chief Economist Prosper Chitambara of the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Meanwhile, Zimbabwean lawmakers today told an International Monetary Fund team visiting the country to assess the final phase of the staff monitored program that the IMF is taking too long to normalize relations with Zimbabwe. The parliamentarian said the country would be soon heading for elections to choose another government without any meaningful action from the multinational institution. But the head of IMF believes that Zimbabwe should first pay its huge debts before the IMF normalizes relations with the Southern African nation. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera reports from Harare.
Frustrated lawmakers from Parliament's Budget and Finance Committee told the IMF team, after it had briefed them on their mission, that the staff monitored program, which started in 2013 during the inclusive government era, is taking too long, and if nothing is done now, the country would start preparing for the next elections without any meaningful progress in normalizing relations with Zimbabwe. Committee Chairman David Chafika of ZANU-PF said there has been extensions to the program without any tangible benefits.
Can you tell us exactly whether you want, whether this one, there is going to be any value derived from this, or it's something that we should forget about?
Another lawmaker, Samson Mukandiro of ZANU-PF, asked the IMF team to be flexible so that Zimbabwe can resume accessing financial assistance from the Bretton Woods institutions and other international organizations.
We are not saying the fund should just be, pump money into the country.
But head of mission, Domenico Faniza, said while Zimbabwe had made some progress in the staff monitored program and had submitted its debt payment plan to the IMF in Lima, Peru last October, the organization cannot do anything unless Zimbabwe pays its debt.
You have to pay back the arrears. Until Zimbabwe has not paid back the arrears to the fund, the World Bank and the African Development Bank, we cannot act.
He added that it was also critical for Zimbabwe to build consensus from the international creditors, who are key in the decisions of the IMF board. He said, while the IMF mission can present a good report on Zimbabwe, nothing positive would come out if relations were not good with international creditors.
It will be critical and essential to make sure that we have the support of the stakeholder. Otherwise, even if the fund staff says, well, look, we have an ambitious program, we're happy, the board will not accept it.
He said indications are that some of the issues worrying international creditors were not related to debt, but also to the land reform as spelled out in the constitution. Faniza said the sooner the country sorted this, the better. Former Treasury Chief Economist Masimba Manyanya told Studio 7 the lawmakers' frustrations were understandable. He said while Zimbabwe's pace meeting some staff-monitored program targets has been commendable, there is nothing noticeable on the ground, hence the frustrations by lawmakers and ordinary people.
They are asking the same question that other people are asking. Look, we have tried to achieve A, B, C, D, and E on the schedule of targets set by the IMF, but where is it being reflected positively on the ground? You ask that question, you don't get an easy answer, and the elections are arriving, so you have a reason to start panicking.
He said, if anything, things could get worse because what is simply happening now is restructuring the economy to prepare it to receive investment in future. Both Manyanya and Faniza agreed that there is no other way for Zimbabwe except the route that the country has taken. An IMF team is in Zimbabwe for 2 weeks to assess the staff monitored program and make further consultations, and will present its report to the IMF board meeting in May. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
a Zimbabwean based in South Africa makes a big leap in the lucrative film industry.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
U.S. Special Operations Forces have captured a suspected Islamic State operative in Iraq, U.S. defense officials said.
Police in southern Malawi say a mob has burned to death seven men who allegedly possessed human bones to be used in witchcraft.
Democratic Hillary Clinton and Republican Donald Trump have strengthened their grips on their party's presidential nominations, racking up wins in key states on Super Tuesday, the primary season's most important day of voting.
A Malaysian official says, based on early reports, a piece of debris found in Mozambique likely comes from Boeing 777 jet, the same type of plane as missing Malaysian Airlines flight MH370.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
A Zimbabwean based in South Africa is carving a niche in the film industry and has just made a big leap in the lucrative business after producing a documentary that will be premiered this month in New York. Davidson Mudzingwa of Mvura Ye Africa Production directed Lost Tongue, a documentary that explores the revival of the ancient and endangered Nulu language of Komani San people in the Kalahari Desert. The documentary captures the journey of a Komani San woman, Helen Steenkamp, who is determined to restore and revive her disappearing language and culture. Studio 7's Gibbs Dube speaks with Mudzingwa about the documentary, which will be premiered as a surprise package at the Socially Relevant Film Festival in New York.
So far, our finished productions, we have two feature films, Lost Tongue and What's the Freak, which is an environmental documentary looking at the advent of shale gas mining in the Karoo region of South Africa. And we have two short films, Bush Trail and Roaring Jets, and a whole lot more of other public service PSAs that we did for different organizations that are in different platforms in the internet and also broadcast TV.
And we're told that you are about to come to America. Why are you coming here?
In the U.S., from the 14th to the 21st of March, there's a film festival called the Socially Relevant Film Festival in New York. And our film, we're fortunate to be selected to screen at the same prestigious festival. And this film is called Lost Tongue. It will be screened on the 17th of March in New York.
Now, give us a bit about what the film is all about.
The film Lost Tongue is based on a young lady called Helena Steenkamp. She's one from the Komani San group. And the Komani San group is a grouping of the people under the San tribe. You know, those in the Kalahari, people usually call them Bushmen. So they are from the Komani San group. So we followed her for about 3 years, filming an effort to revive or to retain a language which is called Nu. Nu is one of the most ancient languages in the world. And for those that done research about it, they say it's about 25,000 years old. So the problem with this language is only three elders left, and the youngest of these elders is 8 years old, who can speak the language fluently. So Elias' efforts have been to ensure that the language doesn't die, doesn't disappear with the death of these elders who are still surviving. So we followed you for those 3 years to look into life, to look into the issues of this language. And as we followed there, it all branched out into other thematic areas, such as culture and identity. Because during the filming, Elena asked a lot of questions about who she is and what are her values, what are her cultures as a Komani San person. And these all issues had to be answered somehow in the documentary, and they also became universal themes. Both a lot of countries, a lot of people are facing the same problem. If you check in different countries, we have in SADC, in Zimbabwe, we also have the San people, or some might call them the Bushmen in Cholocho, and also the Tonga people in Binga. They're also facing the same problem of a language that's disappearing. And a language doesn't disappear on its own. It goes with the values. It goes with the culture. It goes with identity. So these are the areas of focus that we had in this documentary.
So what is the aim really here?
The aim of this documentary is to showcase the urgency of the issue. This is primarily the issue in the Kalahari of the Komani San people, that there's a dying language here, that is only three people left, the rest speaking Afrikaans. And these people need somehow to retain their language. Somehow they need that. They need to record their language from the elders. They need to build a media center, which we are also trying to help through this film, that after people watch the film, they can contribute to the building of a multimedia center in the Kalahari, where these people can go to the computers and listen to their language and learn the language. But on a wider scale, this film brings an issue that is affecting many societies, an issue of disappearing cultures, disappearing values, and also identities that are now mixed, identities that are also disappearing. And this is what we want people to reflect after watching this documentary, that who I am, am I following my values? Can I still speak my own language fluently without mixing with other languages? Am I really good at my language? What are my cultures? Am I proud of my culture? Am I following my culture? So these are all these issues that want people to question themselves after watching this documentary.
That was Davidson Mudzingwa of Mvuraye Africa Production speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Johannesburg, South Africa. For more details on this issue, please visit our website www.voazimbabwe.com.
The year 2016 is an extraordinary year for people who were born on February 29th. These people are called the Liplings. What is it like to have a real birthday once every 4 years? Studio 7's Patricia Mudadigwa speaks to some of the Liplings.
Tafazo Ndoda is one of the Liplings. When it is not a leap year, Tafazo chooses to celebrate his birthday on February 28th because he cannot afford to wait for every 4 years to celebrate his birthday.
You know what? I've resorted to celebrate my birthday on the 20th of February. Since it comes after every 4 years, one thing that I need to tell you, it's so boring to celebrate it on this day because I was actually born on the 29th of February, which comes after every 4 years.
However, for Rudo Muriengwe, another Lipling, she does not compromise and celebrates her birthday only on February the 29th. Muriengwe says she feels special as most people were born on February the 29th don't celebrate their birthday every year.
It's quite unique and special that I celebrate my birthday on the 29th of February, whilst others celebrate on the 28th. For me, I celebrate it every after 4 years.
Michelle Mawere says her birthday has almost lost value as she has to celebrate it after a long time.
And on the 29th of February is where I celebrate my birthday. But to me, it's not that much important since I have to spend a long 3 years without celebrating the day. And at times, my family and friends, they tend to forget about that day because it's not a day that comes yearly. So to me, celebrating my birthday at times is very fun.
The leap year happens only once every 4 years on February the 29th. And the last February the 29th was in 2012. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Patricia Mdadigwa.
Uganda is headed for a Supreme Court battle over the results of the February 18th presidential poll as tensions in that country continue to climb. Elizabeth Paulette reports for VOA from Kampala.
Amama Mbabazi's lawyers managed to submit their petition to the Supreme Court Tuesday, just minutes before the deadline. The petition lays out 28 alleged irregularities, including bribery, late arrival of voting materials, inconsistencies with voting cards, and election papers the opposition said were pre-checked and stuffed into boxes. Mbabazi finished a distant third in the February 18th poll. Results showed President Yoweri Museveni winning a fifth term in office with 60% of the vote. Second-place finisher Kizza Besigye was not able to get a petition into the courts by the deadline. His camp says repeated arrest and detention by security forces made it impossible for Besigye to file a challenge. Besigye, Museveni's main challenger for the past 15 years, previously challenged election results in 2001 and 2006. His party says they will speak to Mbabazi's camp about possibly joining Mbabazi's petition. Robert Karunda, a legal expert in Kampala, says that's unlikely to happen.
I don't think, though, that he will, because I think there have been two principal issues with his going to the court. In the first place, after 2006, he decided he'd never go back to that court, as he called it, but also because of the handcuffs.
However, if just one count of Mbabazi's petition is ruled in favor, the election can be nullified. This could lead to another election within 30 days. The Supreme Court could also name another winner. Meanwhile, journalists in Uganda are coming under increasing pressure. Twice this week, local television stations have done live broadcasts of police loading journalists into cars and taking them away. Robert Sampala, with the Human Rights Network for Journalism in Uganda, says this trend began before the vote.
Since the campaign season started, we have recorded now over 80 violations and abuses of media rights and freedoms. Lately, we've now seen a more systematic and cruel crackdown on the journalists, especially those who are covering Besigye in Kasangati. Now we have a total of 17 journalists victimized in about 4 or 5 days.
Police say they are arresting people they deem to be disturbing the peace or inciting violence. However, with most journalists being let go the same day, and most of them without charge, many feel these roundups are a tactic of intimidation. The Supreme Court is expected to hear Mbabazi's petition next week. The court will have 30 days to rule. Elizabeth Pola for VOA News, Kampala.
And in sports news, Dynamos Football Club leave Harare tomorrow for Malawi for friendly matches in preparation for the new season, which starts in the first week of April. Club chairman Kenny Mubaiwa says the team will play chicken in an away match in its first fixture. The Premier Soccer League has released the new fixtures, which are as follows for the first weekend. Bulawayo Giants Highlanders will clash with Wange FC, and Capes United will face Chapungu. Visit our website www.voazimbabwe.com for more details on the fixtures. Mubaiwa gives us an update of how Dimbare is preparing for the new season.
We are going to play chicken in as our first league match on the 2nd of April.
And how prepared is your team? We see that you have a new coach and you've also signed in some foreign-based players. Tell us a little bit about this.
We did not rest ever since the new coach arrived. We've been having games with first division teams and other teams from the Premier League. We had a friendly match with the Cup Warriors from Zambia. Tomorrow we are leaving for Malawi, where we are going to play two games in Malawi. Coming back on Tuesday, leave again on Thursday to Tanzania to play more games in Tanzania. For now, I can simply say we are prepared for the new season.
You were talking about a lot of international matches that you're going to be playing outside of Zimbabwe. What has brought this on?
What we thought is for us to play teams that are local here, we will not get to a point what we want. We are better off playing other teams outside Zimbabwe, so that we'll be able to get ourselves with those teams, the champions of other countries. This is what we plan to do.
That was a Dynamo's club chairman, Kenny Mubaiwa, speaking with us from Harare. My
kom arus ei dita te kmas je konahe tai huha tang auska makai ei kom arus ei dita te kmas je konahe tai huha tang auska makai ei kom arus ei ingau te kmas je konahe tai huha tang auska makai ei kom arus ei.
That is a Khoisan song that is featured in the documentary that we told you about earlier on called Lost Tongue. And that's it for tonight. My name is Chris Gande. We're leaving you in the safe hands of Ntunga Milinkomo. This is Chris Gande. Good night.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye, wishing you a very pleasant evening and a good night.